Kevin Barrett, tell me a couple of things that connect 9/11 to COVID. What are the big connecting pieces? What makes COVID look like 9/11?
Well, it's transformational fear-mongering. It's terror-based mind control or trauma-based mind control. They've traumatized everybody, and they're trying to do a huge social transformation based on mass trauma. They nonstop fear-mongering in the media, and of course, in both cases, the fear-mongering is pretty implausible, more so with 9/11. There was zero terrorist threat to most Americans, mm-hmm. and there's a very small COVID threat to most Americans, but they want us terrified so they can manipulate us into obeying them and marching off to war and killing and dying for them.
Welcome to Freedom Loves Company on ProgressiveSpirit.net and JohnShuck.com. I'm John Shuck. Freedom Loves Company is broadcast live every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Revolution.radio Studio B and slightly edited for podcast and distribution through the Pacifica Radio Network. My name is John Shuck, and this is a brand new show on Revolution Radio. Very excited to be on Revolution Radio. The name of this program is called Freedom Loves Company, and I've been a radio announcer. I did this professionally back in the day when I still spun little wax records around in the 80s, and then I became a preacher and did that for 28 years, and now who knows what I am. I'm a librarian right now, but I love radio, and I love free speech, and I love freedom, and I'm concerned, as many are concerned, that freedom is very fragile and slipping away. Right now, I have Kevin Barrett. Dr. Kevin Barrett has his own show on Revolution Radio. In fact, he was the one that was helpful in getting it and getting and suggesting me on here. And he's on, I believe it is Friday nights, Revolution Radio, 8 to 10 Eastern Time. And we're going to invite Kevin to unmute. Kevin, are you with me?
Hey, hi, John. It's great to be with you on Revolution Radio.
Wow, it works. Okay. Actually, this isn't really that complicated once you... I shouldn't speak so soon, but we'll see.
It can't be that much more complicated than the KBOO studios with all those Antifa people crawling around.
Oh, man, are they complicated. Yeah, that is actually how this whole thing began. I first met Dr. Kevin Barrett in Portland at Portland State February 2018, and we were, Kevin was on a panel, and I happened to be the moderator of the panel about Saudi war crimes against Yemen, and who else was there? Scott Bennett was there, and Jim Fetzer was there, and a couple of other people to talk about the situation in Yemen. Anyway, that got recorded, and that's how we got connected, and we met at the local Islamic Center, had dinner together. I learned some incredible things and decided to have Kevin on my radio show on KBOO in Portland. That's what I was doing, volunteering there. And as it turned out, just before we were going to go on, a couple of days, I guess it was, in March, started getting all of this... calls that, oh my gosh, you can't have Kevin Barrett on, though. The whole world will crash. And the staff, I thought, would be more reasonable, but they weren't. And so, as it turned out, Kevin was not allowed to be on and has spent probably over a year and a half trying to appeal this decision to no avail. In the meantime, Kevin had me on his show a couple of times, and so this is actually the first time we've been able to do it. And finally, the culmination of this weirdness was in November 2019, when I ended up just playing a portion of Kevin's speech way back at the conference about Yemen, and which was, by the way, a KBOO-sponsored event. And in the middle of it, they... chopped it off. Apparently the station, whoever was on staff, got a call, as I understand it, from whoever makes these calls on behalf of what is proper for everyone to hear. The station and the show was taken off, and Christmas music was played instead. And so I kind of had enough of that. So I said, you know, I'm going. I already left my church, and so over basic similar kinds of issues of speech. And so I thought, wow. But here we are on Revolution Radio. And so all this time I've been wanting to interview Kevin, to actually talk to Kevin. And Kevin Barrett has had graciously had me on his Truth Jihad show a couple of times. And really, it's really remarkable. I really shouldn't be there. I don't have the credentials, but he's gracious enough to have me on False Flag Weekly News once a month. And so that's fun on the third Saturday. And so I thought, well, here's an opportunity for me to really get a chance to talk to Kevin Barrett, to get you to know who Dr. Kevin Barrett is, because I think his story is a fascinating one. It's a story of incredible courage, and as far as I see it, and standing up for principles no matter what. So, Dr. Barrett, can you tell us a little bit about how it is that what happened at the University of Wisconsin back in, what was it, 2006?
Yeah, sure, John. You know, I was a long time literature student at various universities. I got two master's degrees, one in English and one in French literature back at San Francisco State, and then went for my PhD in African languages and literature, with the language being Arabic, and then a kind of a minor in Islamic studies and folklore at the University of Wisconsin. And that took a while. So I was finishing that up in, you know, a little bit after 9/11 happened. And then just as I was finishing my PhD in 2004, actually at the very end of 2003, I woke up to the fact that there was such obvious evidence that 9/11 was a false flag, that they had blown up the World Trade Center with explosives and tricked us into going to war and killing millions of innocent people for the wrong reasons. And so I was not happy with that. And I started doing activism and teach-ins and working with the 9/11 truth movement. And so then in June of 2006, I suddenly got dragged onto Fox News after the Wisconsin State Legislature came after me at the behest of Lynn Cheney and Karl Rove, who needed to try to make a scapegoat for the 9/11 scholars to try to prevent the other professors from doing the same thing I was doing. We had about 100 people in Scholars for 9/11 Truth at that point. So they kind of made my academic career toxic with all of this publicity. And so I tried to leverage the publicity to getting people to take a second look at 9/11. And so that wrecked my academic career. And I've been in alternative media and publishing ever since.
It just people couldn't even look at it. Is that right? And that's interesting. I hadn't heard that before, that you were kind of the scapegoat, the example set, right? This is what happens to Kevin Barrett's going to happen to the rest of you. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, first they went after Jim Fetzer. And the talking point that Karl Rove, apparently, or whoever had fed to their media friends was, there are evil professors corrupting our nation's youth, teaching them conspiracy theories. So they first dragged Jim Fetzer onto Fox News. Of course, with Jim, you hardly have to drag him, and brought him on with Ollie North. And Jim Fetzer and Ollie North faced off, and it didn't work out so well for the propagandists, because Jim blew up their propaganda line. Ollie had been trained to pursue this propaganda talking point that Jim was an evil professor who was teaching conspiracy theories to his poor, innocent students and corrupting them. But as soon as he did that, Jim said, "Oh, you got your facts foxed, Ollie. I'm not actually teaching anything about 9/11 in my classes." And that threw Oliver North off. He had no idea what to say after that. And so Jim pretty much cleaned his clock. So they had to go back to square one and say, well, let's try to find somebody who really is teaching conspiracy theories, or who we can at least claim is. And so they did some research, apparently, and found that I had been very active in the 9/11 truth movement, and I was teaching at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. My course was basically Islam 101. And they figured, well, maybe he's going to talk about 9/11 in the course. So they had a Milwaukee mainstream broadcaster named Jessica McBride, who was married to the up-and-coming right-wing neocon Republican district attorney in Waukesha County, the biggest Republican county in Wisconsin. So Jessica invited me on her radio show on WTMJ, the biggest station in Wisconsin. And I went on her show at 8 in the evening. I stayed on until maybe 9:30 or 10 p.m. And then the next morning, the big anti-university Republican in the state legislature, Steve Ness, went after me in a press conference, saying that I was this evil teacher of conspiracy theories who was corrupting the youth of Athens and needed to be expelled from the university. So that then brought me all that publicity, and they, you know, the big media went after me, and I fought back. And it appears that that was, all of this was orchestrated because they had tried to ignore the 9/11 truth movement for the first 5 years, but it just kept building and building and building. And from the beginning of 2006 through summer of 2006, the Scholars for 9/11 Truth appeared with 100 professors suddenly on board. And anybody with a functioning, you know, brain can figure this out. And so professors are kind of dangerous in that if they think that they have freedom of speech and inquiry, they might start talking about this. So that's why I think that the Karl Rove orchestrated 9/11 cover-up propaganda people decided that they needed to try to make an example of somebody by pushing this talking point that there are these evil professors corrupting our nation's youth, and if they could beat up a couple of them, then the others might back off. So that's what they tried to do. And I think it was, you know, mixed success, because they probably did slow the growth of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, and teachers who were teaching 9/11 Truth in their classes had to kind of go underground. I wasn't, actually, but there were some who were, and they had to be a lot more careful after that. So they did scare the academy into something closer to silence. But they also, by putting me on Fox News and CNN and so on, and the New York Times and Chicago Tribune and stuff, that actually alerted all kinds of people to the fact that there was a controversy about this. So a lot of folks joined the 9/11 Truth Movement after first hearing about it through this wave of publicity. So overall, I think they may have actually shot themselves in the foot.
I remember reading a few articles about this just recently. In fact, I kind of went to our database and saw us on ProQuest database, a number of articles about you in this time. And you had a number of supporters, too, I mean, letters to the editor and whatnot, including students who were in your corner.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I remember the reporter from the Capital Times newspaper, which was actually providing me very favorable coverage, kind of shockingly. And I think that's because the most respected guy there was John Nichols. And Nichols still, I believe, works with the Progressive. He's a pretty big time guy in left wing alternative media circles. And he's hip to 9/11 Truth. He won't talk about it because he knows that's the end of his career if he does. But he talked about it with me informally and made it very clear that he was very much on board and knew all about it. And he's written a couple of books on Cheney that don't quite go there, but basically portray Cheney as the guy who would be perfectly capable of being a key part of 9/11. So anyway, John Nichols at the Cap Times, I think, influenced that newspaper, and they provided me very favorable and wall-to-wall coverage. I was making headlines, it seemed like, every other day in that newspaper. And prior to this, I had actually published two op-eds. The first two hardcore 9/11 truth op-eds in the country. And then I published one more after the controversy broke out. So it's getting really good media there. And the biggest TV station in Madison, which is Channel 3000, was also very fair-minded and brought me on to talk about Building 7 and then broke the media blackout on Building 7. You know, they'd been ordered in all the big media outlets never to show the demolition of Building 7. And so if people actually see it come down, they can see it's obviously a controlled demolition. But Neil at Channel 3000 chose to go against that. He brought me on, was very sympathetic, and like John Nichols, I learned privately that he understands very well what happened on 9/11 and was cheering for the truth movement. So there's a lot of closet truther support, even in mainstream media circles, especially among the left-leaning people. And at that time, the left was much more awake than it is today, maybe because Bush and Cheney were involved in the 9/11 thing, and it was easy to hate them if you were on the left. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I got a lot of support, and that's why I really think it backfired. They did manage to whip up hatred on the part of Fox News viewers and such, who would, you know, I got a lot of death threats and things like that. But overall, the letters were running about 50-50 or better. And the Cap Times reporter, I remember telling me that he couldn't believe it, that whenever he interviewed people on the street about this, pretty much the only reaction he ever got was, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if what Barrett's saying is true. So that moment was pretty interesting, and the poll showed that we had a lot of people that were waking up at that point. About a third were basically thinking that it was likely that 9/11 was a false flag designed to launch the wars, and as many as 80 or 90% didn't fully believe the government story.
I'm speaking with Kevin Barrett. My radio show is called Freedom Loves Company, and my name is John Shuck. Happy to have a new show on the network, Revolution Radio. It is a very good cause, good for your soul, good for your heart. Now, you had David Ray Griffin come out to Wisconsin while you were in the midst of this, didn't you?
Yes, in April of 2005.
Earlier.
We brought David to Wisconsin. And this was actually before I had been ambushed at the university. So 1 year, actually a little over a year before I was thrust into the limelight in this neocon plot to try to stop the professors from jumping on board with the truth movement, I had invited David Ray Griffin to Madison, and he gave a great speech on 9/11 and the American Empire. And it went kind of viral because C-SPAN came and covered it. And that was the first time that the 9/11 truth movement had drawn any significant mainstream coverage. So it was a great success. Nearly 500 people showed up, filling the auditorium at the University of Wisconsin. And there was David behind the University of Wisconsin podium giving that terrific speech. And I think this was the sort of thing that had the neocons flustered and concerned and feeling like they needed to push back.
You know, it's interesting as David Ray Griffin published one of his I don't know how many books he's had about 9/11, maybe 13 by now. I'm not sure the exact number, but I know well over a dozen. And one of them was called Christian Faith and the Truth Behind 9/11. And anyway, that was published by my denomination's publishing house, Presbyterian Publishing House. And they kind of went ballistic on it, too. Somebody went and attacked them and forced the people to remove his book and fire a couple people. But it was interesting at that time because there was a person within the Presbyterian church who made a study guide of his book, you know, just very Presbyterian-like, you know, kind of librarian-like. Well, let's sit around the table and let's talk about feelings and we'll bring out, you know, and there was a moment in which people really were interested in opening up to this. And then it pretty much all shut down and became psychologically for people just a taboo area. You don't go. Dragons are there. Kind of what 9/11 has come. And how did that? What is your theory on that? How did that happen? Is it the power of PSYOP?
Yeah, and maybe partly it's that the part of the audience that's open to it was actually reached. And so there are so many people who basically get it, but don't want to devote their lives to it. Mm-hmm. And then the more resistant people who were more susceptible to the injection of fear in the original operation, of course, 9/11 itself was a great example of trauma-based mind control that paralyzes people at the unconscious level by injecting them with massive fear. You know, Martha Stout wrote a book called The Paranoia Switch, in which she cited research showing that about half of the American public exhibited clinical PTSD after 9/11 due to the images they had seen on television. So a certain percentage of the population is terrorized into really being pretty resistant to this. Although if you ask them the question the right way, the polls show you can get 80, 90% who don't fully believe the government's account. But there's a fair number of them who just aren't going to go there. They've been brainwashed. And so as you use up the ones, you know, you alert the ones and wake up the ones who haven't been brainwashed, eventually you run out of a new audience. And so that's kind of the model that the propaganda forces used to stop the spread of the so-called 9/11 conspiracy theory was this kind of inoculation, they call it, which, of course, is now being used with that same medical metaphor using COVID. They say that the COVID conspiracy theorists are a threat to public health. So they're using a medical model of contagion. They're trying to contain the contagion. And the way that works is they say, okay, well, this truth virus is it's hitting these susceptible people and raging through that portion of the population that it can hit. So what we need to do is contain it. So we need to try to quarantine those people And so what they do is they try to get us off of big social media and force us into little corners of the internet where we're talking to each other, but we're not, preaching to the choir, but we're not reaching new people who might catch the truth virus. So they did work very, very hard at that. A tremendous amount of time, effort, and money was spent figuring out how to try to contain the truth movement. Wayne Madsen, the former NSA officer, says there were more than 1,000 NSA people working full-time on containing the 9/11 truth movement at one point. And the public part of this was led by Cass Sunstein, who was Obama's information czar. And he put out his directive in the form of a book called Conspiracy Theories, Causes, and Cures, which argued for the government, quote-unquote, infiltrating conspiracy movements and disabling the purveyors of conspiracy theories through promoting so-called beneficial cognitive diversity, among other means. So what he means really is that they will send sort of COINTELPRO voices into the truth movement who will then bring on all sorts of craziness, discredited stuff like flat earth theories and things like that. And that's what he meant by so-called beneficial cognitive diversity. If you have the 9/11 truth movement full of people arguing about flat earth, then the rest of the people are going to be protected from the truth contagion. So that's the kind of thing that was going on, I guess. And, I think we succeeded in waking up a lot of people, but we, of course, did not succeed in having a real revolution, that is, overthrowing the power structure that did 9/11, and in particular, getting justice in the form of prosecuting and convicting the people who did it. So, of course, that's a tall order, and the odds of ever succeeding at that were probably pretty small, because, let's face it, the criminal oligarchs throughout history have gotten away with most of their crimes. And that's just the way it is. So we have to face the fact that our odds are low. But I think we've certainly raised consciousness quite a bit, and we've made life more difficult for the psychopaths. And who knows, maybe we'll win this COVID thing. It's still possible. With Nicholas Wade's new article essentially turning the tide and pushing the fact that COVID is a bioweapon into the mainstream, we still have a chance to essentially convict the same people. I believe it's largely the same people that did 9/11, who also did created the COVID pandemic as a U.S. biowar attack on China and Iran. And if we can get them for COVID, then that we have a chance. It's early on, and right now the media is opening up to the fact that it's a bioweapon. So everybody should be pushing this. Everybody listening right now should spend some time trying to alert everybody that COVID is a bioweapon, and it almost certainly was. It comes out of a U.S. biowar attack on China and Iran.
Kevin Barrett, my guest. We're going to talk about that. This is Freedom Loves Company. I'm John Shuck, and this is Revolution Radio. And we're talking about Kevin's story. And I'm thinking I wouldn't have been perhaps able to spot the phoniness of COVID had it not been for 9/11 and being aware of that. And so I'm thinking what I was getting at was 9/11 was a hard one, I think, for many people. But more and more people got it, and more people perhaps also got this COVID thing because of that. I mean, you can fool all the people all the time, maybe, or a lot of the time, but it gets harder and harder as time goes on and you keep trying it. And I just think that there are people waking up in lots of different ways to the various machinations of the oligarchs. And this COVID is a big one. And when it first hit, I was thinking a bioweapon. Yeah, I read Francis Boylston. I read Whitney Webb's article about all of the bioweapon sins that the United States has and the laboratories are all over the world. And what maniacs do this? There's that. And then Iran, and that looked like a real target right there, especially wasn't even Tehran, was it? It was Qom, I think, where they get or they got the many of the leaders of the Iranian government. And so that obviously looked like, boy, it was a target. And then something came out that, a few people were saying, no, there isn't a virus at all, that this is all a media manufacture. And so I kind of went there for a while. But you were tenacious in figuring out, no, that we got to stick with this bioweapon thing. And I'm thinking, gosh, now that more I've been talking to you and I've read Ron Unz's articles, and he was on your show in May and in March, and there's something. I think this is the right play. That at the very least, there's more going on, obviously, that Ron Unz doesn't really get into when he talks about COVID as a U.S. deep state bio attack on China. But at the fact level, that's there. Tell me, what is the evidence that you have for COVID being a deep state bioweapon attack on China?
Well, first, of course, we have the context that COVID showed up in a serious way exactly at the wrong place and time for China. It showed up in Wuhan right in time for the Chinese New Year, which is when the entire nation of China pretty much is traveling, going through Wuhan, the transit hub of the entire country. So if you wanted to try to bring China's economy to its knees, you would unleash a bioweapon in Wuhan on Chinese New Year. And that's precisely what happened. Coincidentally, the United States had funded the creation, essentially, of a level 4 biolab in Wuhan, setting the Chinese up for what's happening now, which is the blame China game. Another interesting coincidence that's far too coincidental, to my mind. And then one other contextual thing that we just have to know about, and everybody, you know, should know at least this much about geopolitics. We should expect the U.S. to wage biological war or some other form of preemptive war targeting China's economy based on the lessons of history. There's the Thucydides paradox work of Graham Allison that explains that almost every time a number two power is rising and challenging a number one power, the number one power resorts to preemptive warfare to prevent being displaced by the number two power. And right now, the USA is the number one power, and it's infested by neoconservatives who have pledged in the Bush Doctrine and Philip Zelikow and other places to prevent any other power from rising to challenge it. So China is being driven to that to challenge the U.S. by its economic growth. It's been at near double-digit economic growth for a couple of decades. And if anything remotely like that continues, China will surpass the U.S. as number one power. So given that, the U.S. is virtually guaranteed to attack China in such a way as to prevent its economic growth or to damage it. And so knowing that in today's world, biological weapons are in many ways the go-to way to go after an economy, at least theoretically, we would expect a U.S. bioattack on China. So when COVID shows up in the Chinese transit hub on Chinese New Year, the worst possible place in time, that in itself is already a tip-off. And if you were, you know, a Las Vegas odds maker, you would have to say, okay, that's at least 90% chance that that's a U.S. bioattack on China. And then you notice that in October, which is when the first cases appeared, and then, of course, they multiplied exponentially so that by the Chinese New Year, you would have the problem appearing. It was exactly at that moment when this virus first appeared in Wuhan, unbeknownst to everybody, that the U.S. Military games team showed up there. 200 U.S. military officers and maybe a couple of special ops guys with test tubes along with them wandering around Wuhan, a perfect opportunity for launching such a bioweapons strike.
And they did so badly in the sports games. The U.S. was like at the bottom of the list. Anyway, go ahead.
Right. Yeah, maybe they wore themselves out running all over Wuhan uncorking test tubes. I don't know. I know. So these are some of the most obvious circumstantial items. And then where does this virus go after Wuhan? It goes to Qom, Iran. There's no Chinese presence in Qom. I've been there. I've never seen a Chinese face. But somehow this virus appears in Qom, which is the place that where the mullahs or the religious leaders of Iran call home. And it seemed to selectively target top Iranian leaders. A huge number of them actually got it, and a number of them died. So that was immediately after China. Now, shortly before this, the U.S. had assassinated General Soleimani, the man who would have been the next Iranian president, the most popular leader in Iran, and the most effective military leader. And so what a coincidence that suddenly, you know, first this virus goes after the rising economy of China, which is challenging the U.S. for global supremacy, and then it goes after Iran. And of course, both China and Iran were particularly hated vociferously by the neocons that Trump had appointed, specifically Pompeo and Bolton. So given all of these things, you know, it seems these are way too many coincidences. Now, if you're the Las Vegas odds maker, it goes up from 95% to maybe 98%. And then along comes the smoking gun, which is that last year, actually, this would have been last spring, about a year ago, ABC News reported, and I believe they corroborated this with four separate high-level intelligence sources, that the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency had issued an urgent warning in November of 2019, warning their allies and their military forces that a terrible pandemic was brewing in Wuhan, China. And that didn't really, it didn't cause panic, it, you know, somehow disappeared into the paperwork at that time. But somebody had alerted the DIA to put out that memo. Now, at that time, in November 2019, nobody except the perpetrators of this bio attack could possibly have known that there was a terrible pandemic brewing in Wuhan, because it had first affected a very small number of people. And remember, you know, 90% of people who get COVID, it just seems like a normal flu, maybe 95% sometimes. So, you know, it was spreading, but nobody knew it. Nobody could have known it except the people who unleashed it. And the Chinese government didn't find out about it until the very end of December. So a month, over a month before China knew that there was this pandemic spreading in Wuhan, the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency had issued that warning. And this has been corroborated by those four intelligence sources to ABC News, and then by Israeli sources as well. So that is a pretty good smoking gun. They tried to then deny it and claim that those warnings never existed, but it's a totally unconvincing denial. And it doesn't explain why the four original intelligence sources said what they said to ABC News. There's no possible explanation for why they would have said that unless such a memo really had been issued. And the best explanation for why it would have been issued would have been that the perpetrators of this attack, trying to sort of cover their whatevers, had, you know, let DIA know to put out such a warning. And of course, the DIA people who put out the warning didn't realize how urgent it was, nor did the people who received it. So probably a few, if any, people actually protected themselves, and this warning kind of fell on deaf ears. In any case, we put all that stuff together, and this becomes kind of a slam dunk case. And that's why, you know, knowing all this stuff, it's in the public domain. It's been very beautifully put together in Ron Unz's articles. So it's such a strong case that the authorities had to see to it that the Unz review was banned from social media and massively hidden and demoted and shadow banned from Google, so that people wouldn't even hear that such an article exists. And then when the Associated Press and the Atlantic Council, one of the top think tanks in America, went after the COVID conspiracy theory super spreaders, they included me on that list. And when I did my interview with the journalist, I told him to talk to Ron Unz. And of course, he didn't. And he didn't mention Ron's name in the article. And he wrote a very distorted article, obviously, you know, anti-truth propaganda pushback. So given all of that, and of course, there's more, but those are some of the choice items. I think there's nobody could possibly argue that there isn't a very, very strong prima facie case that this was indeed a U.S. neocon bio attack.
That warning by the DIA reminded me of a warning that Building 7 had come down 20 minutes before it did. The reporters exactly. saying that, you know, the BBC reporter, right. and then what was his name? Aaron Brown, who was on CNN. He does a double take. He looks around. Oh, the building's still standing there. So those are, yeah, that makes the case very clearly that this is certainly something. And the whodunit behind it is probably who we'll blame, bring in for questioning, the mustache guy, right, Bolton and Pompeo. And wasn't there, and I'm trying to think, and I remember seeing it, and now I don't have it, it was a speech. Pompeo is giving a speech, and Trump's behind there, and Pompeo says this is an exercise, and Trump's saying, wait, you should have told us. Do you remember that? Have you seen that?
Yeah, I saw that clip. That looked like one of those slips of the tongue, like, yeah. you know, like Rumsfeld talking about the missile that hit the Pentagon. But we never know when those are deliberate and they're being used to mislead us.
Right. Okay, so it looks like COVID, and China reacted quickly, right? Just boarding up everything, city of millions, Wuhan, and all around the whole province, nearly a billion people, right? That they just
they locked down most of their country, and when they do a lockdown, it's a real lockdown.
Yeah, and they did it, and so some were saying, well, this is just kind of this is a show, but really, it might not have been. They're expecting also a biological attack. From the United States, they know all the time, and so you think the leaders of China really expected this to be a biological attack on them, that they aren't part of some kind of conspiracy to fool everybody?
Yeah, I mean, I would think that the Chinese would know what I know and what Graham Allison knows and what everybody who studied international relations knows, which is that the number one power preemptively goes to war against the number two power. And in the case of China, the part of Chinese power that needs to be dealt with by the U.S. is their economy. And the best way to target an economy these days is with a bioweapon. As the Project for a New American Century said in Rebuilding America's Defenses, you know, they look forward to the day that biological weapons, and they actually said race-specific or ethnic-specific biological weapons, will become, quote-unquote, a politically useful tool. And the Chinese know that these neocons are capable of just about anything, and they know that number one powers almost always attack number two powers. They know that they're the number two power. They're not stupid. And then they may have also noticed that their entire, you know, huge chunks of their meat supply were taken out in apparent or likely U.S. biological attacks with the bird flu and swine flu in 2018 and 2019. And they even may believe that the original SARS was a biological attack. There are some indications that it may have disproportionately targeted Asians. So the Chinese are very much on a biodefense footing. And as soon as they got wind that there was a pandemic, they went crazy and just locked down the whole country and somehow managed to stop it.
Now, this moving to Iran, and the attack that killed the leaders in Qom, is this the same COVID, do you think? I mean, are these biological agents kind of molded and shifted to fit different populations or made more lethal in some cases? Because the COVID that seems to be, I don't know, in the United States, it certainly varies in its intensity.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not really aware of statistics about, you know, how many people caught it in Qom and how sick which people were. It does seem that it's usually mostly a big problem for old and infirm people, people with comorbidities. Now, of course, the Iranian leadership in Qom it's not exactly a gerontocracy, but it's something like that because, you know, in these religious scholarship circles, you're very prestigious as long as you live. So it's a little bit like the Supreme Court in the U.S. So the religious leadership in Iran is pretty far along in age. And so if you unleash COVID on them, you might expect it to do some damage. Also, we probably should remember that the people who did this might not know precisely what it's going to do. And they may have contingency plans for various things. It's possible that COVID is not as dangerous as they wanted it to be. And of course, China may have overreacted because they're, for very good reasons, fearful of a U.S. bio attack. And it's even conceivable and here we get into slightly different territory, that the West wanted a COVID emergency. And now people would say, well, how does this tie into, you know, a bio attack on China? Wouldn't the U.S. want to cripple China's economy and have it contained there, which is what happened with previous bio attacks on China, assuming the original SARS was such, and assuming bird flu and swine flu was such? That's what Ron Unz thinks. But I would guess that the people behind COVID would probably be part of this, you know, group of defense intellectuals, so-called, who, you know, like the PNAC people, who were expecting bioweapons to be a politically useful tool, and they might have expected, or at least been aware of the possibility, that if they start a bio war with China, if they, you know, keep sort of accelerating their attacks with bird flu and then, you know, swine flu and then COVID or, you know, human flu or whatever, that at some point, you know, maybe the Chinese will strike back, or the attack will blow back against them. You know, if you get into a world where biological warfare is being waged with increasing intensity, then you're in a world where you have to be ready for the possibility that you're going to have to do lockdowns, and you're going to have to do masking, and you're going to have to curtail civil liberties, and you're going to have to move to a much more controlled and authoritarian kind of environment. And guess what? That's what they want. The same people who would like to stop China's economic rise also would like to make the West more authoritarian. In fact, they probably don't believe that the West stands a chance against China unless it becomes vastly more authoritarian. And specifically, they probably think that the West doesn't have a chance against China because China is moving into the Internet of Things with 5G and supercomputers running everything. And that's going to be so ruthlessly efficient that whoever does that best wins. And the West is way behind. We don't have enough data coming into our supercomputers. We're not spying on everybody enough. The Chinese are doing way better. They have cameras everywhere. So we need an excuse to move into this more totalitarian, highly surveilled society that's going to be much more ruthlessly efficient, and that'll give us a chance to compete with China. So they might very well have either created the so-called blowback or at least welcomed it, and they certainly would have expected it as a possibility. So I think we can actually put these two things together. That is, the same people that would have done the bio attack on China, unlike Ron Unz, I think they might very well have welcomed it in the West as well.
Kevin Barrett, my guest on Freedom Loves Company. We're talking about the attack, COVID. We're talking about COVID, and we're talking about something that isn't really talked about hardly, except for maybe Kevin Barrett and Ron Unz. And I want to get maybe, and who else is talking about this in this way? Now it's everywhere. The idea that, oh, China had the lab, and it's the China. It's kind of now, it's, at first it was a false flag against nature, I thought, and now it's a false flag against China. But I want to talk more about this connection, because now in the United States, because this overreaction, or it seems it's an overreaction. This lockdowns and this masking and the vaccines and what role they play in all of this. I mean, are the same people who did the attack on China also pushing the vaccines, and what's in them?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, and that raises one more possible set of motives, and that would be that if you're one of these neocon so-called defense intellectuals, you know, back in 2000, September of 2000, when you write your PNAC document calling for 9/11 and saying that ethnic-specific bioweapons will be a politically useful tool, you're looking at the future, and you're saying that the world is heading down a really tough, dangerous path. And our job is to keep the U.S. and the West supreme on behalf of the oligarchs that run the West. And so we're going to be facing all these problems, including these demographic problems, and with the huge human population causing an environmental crisis, global warming, possibly really trashing the Earth to the point that it's, you know, we're going to have wars for resources because there just won't be enough to go around. And in that situation, it will be natural and normal for, you know, really heavy duty wars to break out for resources. And so, you know, given all of this, and with bioweapons coming down the pipe and ethnic specific ones, we should prepare for an environment in which there's going to be kind of endemic biological warfare. And this is going to slow the economy, which is will, you know, slow the global warming and slow the environmental problems, and it'll reduce the population, which will also reduce those problems. And so this is the environment we're heading into. So they would have studied and thought about that as the environment, and knowing the neocons, they would have wanted to be extremely vicious and preemptive and mendacious, like they were on 9/11. So they probably would have thought that, okay, so, you know, when we get these pandemics going, and we can try to establish more control over the society, make it more authoritarian and more surveilled, more controlled, more ruthlessly efficient, and, you know, get rid of all of these dissidents who are making things chaotic and, you know, making it hard to fight a war. When you're going to fight a war, you got to get everybody on the same page. That's how 9/11 worked. They had everybody waving American flags and ready to murder Muslims. And so they need something like that for the coming big war against Eurasia and its biggest economic engine, China. So they're thinking along those lines. And so all of this masking and obedience training that they're doing here, the lockdowns and such, that all fits with trying to train your population to be a bunch of goose-stepping, hyper-conformist slaves, you know, or you know, rabid flag-waving maniacs who don't question what they're told. They just march off to die for their country. That's the way they need people to be if they're going to fight World War III against Eurasia and especially China. And remember, you know, how did the culture change with Pearl Harbor and World War II? Well, overnight it went from a free-for-all in a free country to Americans goose-stepping behind a plan to punish Germany and especially Japan. And they say that's what they got with their 9/11 was a new Pearl Harbor to brainwash people in the same way. And now they're doing something similar by this obedience training with the masking, the distancing, the lockdowns, and of course the China hating. And they're kind of, you know, they're doing it to different groups. They get the liberals to be goose-stepping along to all the lockdowns and believing all the crap about China and Russia and Iran. And then they train the conservatives to really hate China. And so they're getting the whole country into a frame of mind where it can wage this war on China, which will include all kinds of biological aspects. And all of this, you know, this world war might very well end up killing off a huge chunk of the planet's population and the U.S. population. And I think that's the kind of horrific nightmare scenario that they're trying to push us into if we don't push back.
Deagle, DEAGEL.com, had come up with a thing that was popular among certain circles. I think this news that the military, this is basically a site that sells, talks about all the military weaponry that's being sold and bought by different countries. And the population of the United States in 2025 would be 100 million, a third of what it is. What do you make of that website saying that?
Yeah, that's very suspicious. On the other hand, it's all kind of unsourced and it doesn't give any real explanation.
Right. And it's written rather sophomoric.
Right. And who is this Deagle character anyway?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's not well enough sourced really for me to be that concerned with it.
Okay. Well, let's go now. You mentioned, unless we do something about it, besides you and Ron Unz, who's talking about this?
Well, that's a good question. The UNS Review, of course, is full of people talking about it in their comments section. But it's very odd. I would guess, though, that just like with 9/11, there may be a whole lot of folks who are sort of whispering about this under their breath at cocktail parties and things like that. John Nichols, who never said in public that he was a 9/11 truther, told me as we were sitting up against the post office in Madison, Wisconsin, he basically let me know that he understood 9/11 and that he said, people will talk about this if you get a few drinks into them at a party, but you know, nobody wants to talk about it in public in a formal setting. And I think that's true here. So I'll bet Nicholas Wade takes Ron Unz's hypothesis seriously. Now, Nicholas Wade and Ron Unz know each other going way back. And Nicholas Wade just pried open the whole mainstream media on the topic of COVID being a bioweapon. Now, Nicholas Wade's article, of course, doesn't get into the Ron-Unz hypothesis that this is a U.S. biotech on China, because he wouldn't be allowed to do that. He's not allowed to publish anything like that in the kind of relatively mainstream venues that he has. But he very likely knows about Ron's argument and probably takes it quite seriously and perhaps even accepts it as likely true. And that's, of course, just one example. So, you know, if the guy who just pried open the whole mainstream media for the discussion of COVID as a bioweapon is a closet COVID truther, you know, that he might just be one among many. But unfortunately, that conversation is still pretty limited. And that's why I really would urge folks to spread it around, you know, to send emails and post it on social media if you can without having it censored, and try to get that conversation going. Because, again, if we don't, we're just, you know, sheeple being led to the slaughter.
Now, one of the things, and you have explained it very well just here in this interview, of the connection, because for a while there's been this division, you know, well, there really isn't a virus, and, you know, it hasn't been isolated, whatever that means, and all of that kind of stuff, that this is all a fake by the big oligarchs. And was that a Cass Sunstein kind of thing?
Yeah, that sounds to me like, in the extreme forms, it's beneficial cognitive diversity. It's like flat earthism. You know, you get the truthers talking about flat earth and you've won, and you get the COVID truthers denying that viruses exist and you've won. Now, I'm not saying that science knows everything there is to know about viruses or anything else, but it's just that anybody who's running around saying viruses don't exist, which is the bottom line of some of these arguments claiming that it hasn't been isolated, is basically painting themselves into a corner and making the world that they're in look non-credible. So, yeah, I mean, I do think, though, that it's the reason they've been able to get people talking like that is because COVID is not particularly dangerous to average people, especially if they know about the treatments. I had Meryl Ness on my show the other night talking about the treatments. There are effective treatments, and they've been suppressed, which is incredibly damning. And the question is, why have the authorities suppressed these effective treatments? Is it just to make money with the vaccines, or is there some, you know, are they trying to prolong the crisis? And Meryl thinks both. And, you know, she thinks they're profiting from this crisis. And what I just explained to you, John, would support the idea that they might want to prolong and intensify the crisis to try to make the social transformation that they feel they need.
Yeah, because this is just going on and on and on. And it's psychologically just damaging people to a level I don't think we have any awareness of this. I mean, if we had a lockdown, we wanted to beat the thing, it should have been done by the end of March. But it just goes on and on and on. There's never a non-season for COVID. I mean, there seems to be somewhat of a lighting it up now, but it's coming back, and it isn't in the cities. It's not any lighter there, is it? All of these lockdowns and all of this weirdness and the vaccine passports and all of that.
Yeah, it's still coming at us, and there's a big reaction brewing against it. And I just hope the reaction becomes more sophisticated.
Okay.
We need to stop the China bashing. Yeah, I don't like Chinese communism either. I don't like what they're doing to their religious minorities. There are problems with that society and government. On the other hand, it's a heck of a lot more competent than ours. And at least they've got their oligarchs under control, which is more than we can say. But I think we shouldn't be bashing other countries when it's our country that's probably waging a horrific war of aggression and which probably unleashed this plague. And so we need to look at ourselves here, just like with 9/11. You know, we've met the enemy and he is us.
Kevin Barrett, we're just getting a couple of minutes out of time. Can you tell me a couple of things that connect 9/11 to COVID? What are the big connecting pieces? What makes COVID look like 9/11?
Well, it's transformational fear-mongering. It's terror-based mind control or trauma-based mind control. They've traumatized everybody, and they're trying to do a huge social transformation based on mass trauma. They nonstop fear-mongering in the media, and of course, in both cases, the fear-mongering is pretty implausible, even more so with 9/11. There was zero terrorist threat to most Americans, mm-hmm. and there's a very small COVID threat to most Americans, but they want us terrified so they can manipulate us into obeying them and marching off to war and killing and dying for them.
Well, that would do it. All right. Dr. Kevin Barrett has been my guest on my new show here, Freedom Loves Company. And Dr. Barrett, I really appreciate you taking the time to explain kind of the basics here to me and to the audience here. And much appreciation for helping me get on Revolution Radio and teaching me a lot of things about the world, and not things I really want to know that much, but you got to know them if we're going to beat them.
All right. Well, thanks, John, and keep up the great work. You're a terrific radio host, and it's wonderful that you're back in business.
Well, it's good to be back in business, and thanks to you.
You have been listening to Freedom Loves Company on ProgressiveSpirit.net. This broadcast originally aired live on Revolution Radio. It has been slightly edited for distribution to radio stations, including the Pacifica Radio Network. Catch Freedom Loves Company live every Sunday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Revolution.radio Studio B. Find podcasts at ProgressiveSpirit.net and JohnShuck.com. I'm John Shuck. Be well.